Oh, agenda paper 11. Which would be disclosures under IFRS 12. And Denise, you have the floor.
Thank you. Good morning. Agenda paper 11 analyzes a request concerning IFRS 12. And this request is to clarify the basis on which the information required in paragraphs 12E to G of IFRS 12 should be disclosed regarding subsidiaries that have non-controlling interests that are material to the reporting entity. So the main question that we were asked is whether this information should be provided at the subsidiary level or at the subgroup level. This means the subsidiary along with its investees. In this paper, we also analyzed similar concerns to the ones raised by a submitter, but on an issue relating to the disclosure required by paragraph 21BII in IFRS 12 for joint ventures and associates. So the first conclusion that we state in the paper, and I know that this might seem too obvious for some of you, but we thought that it would be good to include this reminder in the paper, is that materiality should be assessed by the reporting entity at the group level. And well, in this assessment, it should assess or consider quantitative and qualitative facts and circumstances. So the second conclusion in this paper is that an entity should apply its judgment on deciding which approach meets the disclosure requirement of paragraph 10 of IFRS 12. And this judgment should be made on a subsidiary by subsidiary basis. This is for the disclosures in 12E and G. So we observe that the requirements in paragraphs 12E and F could be met by looking at information in the consolidated financial statements, and the level of disaggregation would be at the subgroup level or at the subsidiary level. And then for the disclosure in paragraph 12G, there we observe that we've got a constraint there that this information should be prepared before intercompany eliminations. So we are saying, well, again, we think that this information could be presented just for the individual subsidiary or for the subgroup conformed by the subsidiary together with its investees. But in this case, the eliminations, the intercompany transactions between the subgroup and other entities in the group will not be eliminated, just to apply the requirement in IFRS 12. And well, for the disclosures required by paragraph 21BII for joint ventures or associates, I think that definitely this information should be based on the consolidated financial statements for the joint venture or associate if it has subsidiaries. And if it doesn't have subsidiaries, then the information should be based on the financial statements in which its joint ventures or associates are equity accounted. So our conclusion is that there are principles in IFRS 12 that can be followed. And consequently, we think that the committee should not take this issue into the agenda and should issue a tentative agenda decision. So if you agree with the staff's recommendation, and if you have any comments on the tentative agenda decision.
Comments? Andrew, you don't have to ring in.
But I do have some comments.
Oh, okay. Well, then you have to ring in.
Someone has to start. I support issuing an agenda decision on this, and I strongly agree that the basis of disclosure should be the one that, based on your judgment, best reflects the objectives of IFRS 12. I don't think this is quite the right place to give guidance, rather piecemeal guidance, on how to apply materiality in the context of providing disclosures. That's a big and topical issue, but a much wider issue that should be addressed by the Disclosure Project, the Disclosure Initiative. One thing I haven't entirely understood the question before us, and therefore haven't entirely understood what we're giving by way of an answer. When we talk about providing information at the subgroup level. In the fact patterns illustrated here, there's a reporting entity, subsidiary B. We own 70% of that, and subsidiary B owns 100% of three other subsidiaries. Are we just talking about the information for subsidiary B? Or are we talking about, if we go down the subgroup route, are we saying that's all you need to give for that group of subsidiaries? In other words, you don't need, in any circumstance, to give further disclosures about subsidiaries, I think it's D, E, and F, in this chart. If we actually have different levels of non-controlling interest in subsidiaries D, E, and F, then I think based on if they're material, you'd need to give separate disclosures for D, E, and F. So is the question just the narrow one about whether if one subsidiary happens to be an intermediate parent company, we present that information on a separate financial statement or consolidated basis?
Denise?
Yeah, I think this means that obviously you have to consider facts and circumstances. If you got an intermediate subsidiary and then some other subsidiaries hanging from that subsidiary which are material, then obviously you have to go maybe a level down and consider consider those subsidiaries within the subgroup. I do not know how best to express, well, in the wording that we are saying that I do not know if you got any proposal to improve this wording. It would be just.
But what we are saying is that you would apply your judgment, and it could be that in some circumstances giving information about B consolidated would be sufficient. In other circumstances it may be that it's about E that you give the information.
Yeah.
So it's about identifying where is the material non-controlling interest, and then how best to give useful information about that non-controlling interest.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sandy, can I jump in here for a second?
Sure.
I guess I read the paper, and I called Denise yesterday because the use of separate, individual, and standalone seemed inconsistent to me. And I wasn't actually certain where we were coming out. But as I read the sub-bullets between the disclosures for 12E and F and 12G, I'm not exact. I guess I'm clearer on what we're saying on 12G than I think what we're saying on E and F. But I guess I'm a little concerned that we sort of say, you can do separate or you can do consolidated group, some without elimination, some with eliminations. Because I think the comment that I consistently hear from users of the financial statements is, how do all these numbers actually fit into the consolidated financial statement? And I looked at I guess it's view one, which is one of the things I believe we're actually saying is okay, or alternative one. And I said, what good is that information to me? Because I have no idea what it means in the context of the financial statements in which these are ultimately presented. I mean, to me, I wanted 2A and 2B. I wanted both of them. So I could understand how these financial statements fit into the context of the broader financial statements, but I'm not certain that we're going to get, that users of the financial statements are going to get consistent information or meaningful information. And when we talk about intercompany eliminations, we're basically saying that for E&F, it's not with intercompany eliminations, but G it is. And I don't really understand how that's useful. You're going to give me profit and loss without it, or with it, I'm sorry, without it, and then you're going to give me summarized information with it. And I'm just sort of left reading this going, what in the world am I going to get that fits into the context of the financial statements? And, oh, by the way, there's a whole lot of choices here that are provided. And to me, if the overarching consideration, and I forget if it's B10 or B11, is useful information, then I think that we can't give all this optionality associated with it. But I just think what we're suggesting here is going to lead to numbers that I don't know how users use consistently.
Let me ask you what may be a rhetorical question. Setting aside whether or not Denise's proposal endorses optionality for the moment,
okay.
Would your need for information be satisfied by any, and this is the rhetorical part, anything short of a consolidating spreadsheet?
I sort of did a little, I really don't like that question.
Okay, I understand that.
No, because I think that it connotes that users want everything, and I don't think that's a fair connotation. I think that what they want is information in context.
So, okay, that's fair.
You know, I guess I get a little defensive in that comment, but you know, would it be nice if you use the example and you said, okay, I see the 700 and I back off the intercompany of the 100 and the 250, and these are some examples in the back, and I showed how you get the 350 and the 350 backed off to the 50, so I got to the net. Would that be nice? Absolutely. But what I really need is 2A and 2B, which says, okay, this is the consolidated subgroup, and the consolidated subgroup fits into the consolidated broader group in this way. All right, and I get how sometimes the standalone might be important if there's a restriction of cash flows in some way, but I still need the consolidated because it still fits into the consolidated. So I don't think they need a complete consolidating schedule. So it wasn't really a rhetorical question, I guess. But I do think that it needs consistency of information so people know what they're getting, and it needs context.
Okay. Now, question to Denise. Sandy suggested, and I have to admit I had this concern when I first read the paper, are we introducing an element of optionality here? Or are you saying that in a particular situation, there's probably really only one set of judgments, but that you have to exercise those judgments?
Yeah. I think
so. It's not really a question of optionality.
No.
It's a question of different circumstances may lead you to make different judgments.
And you need to identify what's going to be the best, what will best meet the disclosure requirements.
Okay. All right. Having had that introduction, let's get back on the usual path. I'm going to go Tony, John, Lawrence.
Yeah, I mean, coming back on the optionality point, I didn't read it to in any way imply there was an optionality. I think there is a the agenda decision is trying to emphasize the principle in the standard. I just think it goes about it in a somewhat convoluted way. There's a lot of words here, and I'm just not sure that people are going to be able to read it and properly understand it. And I just wondered if there is a simpler way of going back to the objective in the standard, which is about understanding what makes up the non-controlling interest and which of them, and the impact of the subsidiaries in which there are material non-controlling interests, or material subsidiaries with non-controlling interests. And I just wondered if there was a simpler way of saying, hey, this is the objective, and management needs to use its judgment to decide how best to present information that meets that objective, and whether you then go on to say, well, that might be in some cases by looking at all the individual subsidiaries, or there might be other cases when you do look at a subgroup as a whole, because that is the best way of providing the information. I just think it could be laid out and explained more simply than it is, but I agree with the principle that the staff is trying to drive out.
You just volunteered to be on a drafting group. Sue?
Tony just said exactly what I was going to say, really. I think what we need to be, the way that IFRS 12 was drafted, and it doesn't always come through in the wording, we can always do a better job when you look back with the benefit of hindsight, but the idea was you have this overriding objective, and the overriding objective is you shall provide information that enables users to understand the composition and these non-controlling interests, what matters about it to you. And then 12 is a more specific list of the sorts of things you should disclose to achieve that objective, but it always needs to be within the context of achieving that objective of helping users understand. And I think it may be in terms of what the committee produces, if all of this was couched reminding people that it's all with a view to meeting this overriding objective, it might help us encourage people away from this checkbox mentality that we're getting into and encourage them more towards a communication mentality. And then things like consistency and things all flow from that, to some of Sandy's points. It's not about an option, it's about choosing what's best to meet the objective, given the things that you've been told to look at.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Bruce, John, Laurence.
Just a quick comment. I mean, I wasn't 100% sure I thought this was very clear.
I mean, what I thought was interesting was when you looked at the summary of the outreach responses, I mean, I don't know if it was cumulative or not, but I mean, a quarter of the respondents said they were aware of diversity in practice, and another quarter said that they didn't believe it was clear. I add those up together, you've got nearly half the people who have said that they don't think this is clear to them, in terms, and that they know that there's diversity. And I guess my only concern about that is, when I read it, I realized, I thought to myself, I could see two ways this could be done. I think that, I don't think it's 100% clear. Now, the concern I do caveat that with is, I do agree with the comment made that this is a very, very new standard. You know, and we've only kind of been through the first major cyclone now, so maybe it's just the practice needs to develop. But I guess the only challenge I've got is that if people are identifying that they don't think it's clear and that there is diversity in practice on it, wouldn't clarity be a good way to go?
John?
I think in relation to 12G, I think there's two issues at play here. There's the level of aggregation or disaggregation at which you report the information, the level of the subsidiary or subgroup. And to me, that's actually a choice as to what's relevant. You may feel, you know, it may be that you have to go down to a more disaggregated level because there are different non-controlling interests further down the group. I think the second issue is, what are the amounts that you report? And view one here seems to imply that the amounts in the separate financial statements or the individual statements of the subsidiary might meet the requirements of 12G. I mean, I don't know how they could when you read B10B, which says summarise financial information about the assets, liabilities, profit or loss and cash flows of the subsidiary that enables users to understand the interest that non-controlling interests have in the group's activities and cash flows. Reporting individual information out of separate or individual financial statements isn't going to tell you anything about non-controlling interest in the group's activities. It has to be the amounts as they're reported in the consolidated financial statements. The paper also looks a bit at the issue of transactions, intercompany eliminations. It doesn't at all deal with the question of fair value adjustments on purchase price allocation and whether you need to reflect non-controlling interest share in the actual amounts that are recorded in the consolidated financial statements. Because the non-controlling interest share in the amounts recorded in subsidiary financial statements is meaningless compared to the amounts of assets recorded for assets and liabilities in the consolidated financial statements. So my view would be that on 12G, you should be reflecting the summarised financial information relating to non-controlling interest from the perspective of how it's reported in the consolidated financial statements.
Yeah, I think you just volunteered too. Laurence?
Yeah, I was having similar reactions as those expressed by Andrew about the example that was taken, whether you would go to E level or whether you do the assessment at the B level. And as far as I understand, people would look at the assessment at the B level unless indeed there was non-controlling interest at the level below. And also what causes me a little bit of a problem is what is written in 1, 2, 3, 4, the fourth paragraph that refers to assess materiality, and the second sentence in this assessment, a reporting entity would consider both quantitative considerations and qualitative considerations, i.e. the nature of the subsidiary. And I'm not sure, perhaps it's picking up a similar comment as John, about how do you do that assessment of materiality. I think that assessment of materiality is based also on materiality on the assets, liabilities, cash flows, and so on, but not necessarily based on the nature of the subsidiary itself. So introducing those qualitative matters, I understand, would be part about disclosure objectives as exactly what Andrew mentioned, but I could not read that element from the objective that was set out in paragraph 10 of IFRS 12.
Okay, let's go to the phones. Fei Long?
Yes, some concern about the approach, whether the approach is appropriate. I think that it needs to be consistently applied. If the staff believe it is independent on the circumstances, then they need to provide further details about what those circumstances are. As there's no base for this in the standard, it would seem to be an additional layer of judgment that is not implied. So would appears to be a change.
Okay, Martin?
Yeah, I mean, I still see the challenge that we might have different disclosures depending on whether we have a subsidiary with non-controlling interest or whether we have a JV or an associate. However, I guess the technical analysis of the staff is right. So therefore, I accept this. I only want to stress on the second last paragraph, and that's also, well, just a practical perspective, that it seems to be very, very challenging if you have an associate to have more or less consolidated information on the subsidiaries of this associate and then comply with the requirements of B12 of IFRS 12. But, well, that's just a practical hint.
Okay. Sandy, anything to add?
Yeah, I guess I would like to echo the comments that I believe it was John made. My original comments were more about what was provided than who it was provided on, and I thought his comments were spot on in making that distinction. I guess maybe I should clarify my comment with respect to providing optionality. I guess for me it seems as though it's optionality because I don't believe that providing the subsidiary only financial statements in the context of these would be useful to investors in only very limited circumstances and only with much other information there about how it actually fits in the context of it. So I guess I'm a little concerned with the notion that we're providing these broad principles and letting management decide, because it seems so obvious to me that only explaining this in the context of the consolidated financial statements is useful, that how can we see these other things as useful information? But I guess add that I see it as optionality because I don't think it's actually useful, but
okay. All right, Patrick.
Yes, I would like to react to the comment made by Laurence about the qualitative considerations. It seems to me that if an issuer is stressing the importance of a subsidiary in its financial communication because, for instance, of the material contribution in the future of this specific subsidiary to its development, because it's in a strategic industry where the development is expected to be very, very quick and important, it may be, according to IFRS 12, worth providing information on this subsidiary. Therefore, I would keep the qualitative considerations in the agenda decision, and maybe it would be useful to clarify what is the nature of those considerations. But if that's your point, Laurence, but I think we need this qualitative characteristic there.
My comment was that, as far as I understand, IFRS 12 is providing additional information in the context of the financial statements produced. I see your point that you would like to have information, better understanding of where you have a subsidiary with non-controlling interest, where prospectively you expect that this will have significant effect on operations. I'm just questioning then, in that case, is this appropriate for the financial statements, or is it type of information that would better sit in MD&A type of information? As I understand, this information is to understand the financial statements presented.
Our rationale in preparing the paper and looking at this was really to say material, assessing what's material in the context of this disclosure requirement in IFRS 12 is not just about size. You also need to look at other factors as well. And so there could be, for example, one of the examples we give in the paper is there could be key intellectual property that is sitting in one of these subsidiaries that has a non-controlling interest, and by virtue of that, that could make it material, not because of the size of what's on the balance sheet. In fact, intellectual property may very well not be a very large amount on the balance sheet in the consolidated financial statements, but it's key to the operations of the group.
So.
And also my recollection, and Alan might remember as well, is when the board was discussing this non-controlling interest information, they were very focused on getting good information from it and understanding the group structure. And one of the very important things that the board came back to a number of times was the implications for the amount of cash that was flowing through the structure. So things like the fact that the non-controlling interest might be in a subsidiary where all the cash in the group is coming from, and what were the implications in terms of the free flow of cash to meet obligations elsewhere. So I think in that sense, nature might come into it as well. It means different things. It's not just, is it a big non-controlling interest? It's what implications does that have for other people in different parts of the group?
Alan?
Just to say one thing, I've heard a couple of people mention here as well about the financial statements of the subsidiary, and it's quite clear in there it's financial information, and I think that was the important thing too. When I was reading Denise's paper, I was looking at that and thought, you know, we probably could have done a better job with the wording in IFRS 12, to be honest, in terms of perhaps elaborating a bit. But it was not designed to just get the financial statements lumped in front of you. It was designed to draw information out of the financial statements in the best way possible. And we're also, the other balance was we didn't want this to be so burdensome that you had to do all these individual adjustments, which is why we went back to the raw data. And the idea is to give you a relatively blunt tool to get a sense of how the non-controlling interests, how much of the assets, etc., would bundled up inside the consolidated financial statements. And I take John's point, maybe it may be better to have the consolidated information, but I think IFRS 12 actually gives you the scope to expand on that and show how that the assets of that subsidiary in which there's a strong non-controlling interest have actually been presented within the consolidated financial statement. So in a way it's quite open. So I don't see it as being a choice in a way. There are different ways of presenting this information to try and understand how non-controlling interests are tied up there.
Andrew, last call.
Just a small point on whether this is a kind of disaggregation of the consolidation. I mean, IFRS 12 does say in B11 that it's before intercompany eliminations, and that's stated. We can't contradict that.
Okay, I'm hearing rattling on the phone. Is that because somebody wants to come in or because you need to use the mute button?
I was going to come in, but I decided not to.
Okay. All right. I struggle here, as I always do on disclosure standards. But I think I see two themes in the comments, maybe three. One theme was, I think, best articulated by John, or that's the one that sticks in my memory, is the what is disclosed. I struggle with how we would answer that without adding to what's in 12. 12 tells you what is disclosed. So I struggle with that one. John, do you see a way to deal with that and that, given that struggle?
Well, I just, for 12G, I don't understand how view one meets the criteria in B10B. because I don't disclosing the non-controlling interest, taking the subsidiary and looking at its amounts and reporting the non-controlling interest in those, I don't understand how that tells you anything about the non-controlling interest proportion of the assets in the consolidated financial statements. Because those are not the amounts in the consolidated financial statements. The amounts in the consolidated financial statements are the amounts that arise from the acquisition of that entity in a business combination. They're fundamentally different. And the gaps, there wouldn't be any consistency. Some subsidiaries, the amounts in the individual subsidiary statements may be very similar to the amounts in the consolidated statements. If the subsidiary was formed formed by the group, then the amounts might be the same. In other cases, there could be significant purchase price allocation adjustments. So reporting non-controlling interest based upon amounts in the individual subsidiary, I don't see how that meets the objectives of the disclosure requirements set out in the standard.
Alan's thumbing through the standard.
John, I think that you've probably identified already the key circumstance when that would matter is where the subsidiary was acquired by the group and there are significant adjustments still remaining between the separate entity financial statements amounts and the group from the purchase price allocation that have been done.
Yeah, I mean your amounts reported in the consolidated financial statements bear no relationship to the amounts reported in the individual financial statements of the subsidiary. But the NCI you're reporting in the consolidated statements are based off the group book values. So reporting the NCI amounts based upon individual subsidiary statements is worthless information.
Okay, then
in effect, you've got an intermediate parent with nothing in it, except an investment in subsidiaries that sit underneath.
Okay, that leads me to think, maybe dangerous. I take your point. I'm not sure it does satisfy the requirement because the information, as you pointed out, is potentially meaningless. Perfectly accurate and useless. I think we could address that in the wording of the agenda decision. So that leads me to my second question, which is, given that we have so far a team of two, I'm going to ask for a third volunteer. Subject to rewording and condensation and everything else that potentially needs to be done, who would support going ahead with the agenda decision? I think Sue articulated what we're aiming for, which is focus the agenda decision on the underlying disclosure principle in 12, get away from the checkbox, which leads you automatically to the problem John raises, I think. Who would support that?
Ten in the room,
Bruce being the only no. Mikhail, you're a no too?
No,
you support it. Okay, going to the phones, Martin?
Yes.
Sandy?
Let me make certain I understand the question. You're asking me if I support the tentative agenda decision as written up now?
No, I'm saying that as subject to redrafting to focus it more on the disclosure objective as Sue articulated.
Okay, I'll volunteer to draft.
Okay, that's your third member of your drafting committee. Do you support it on that basis?
Yes,
okay. And Fei Long?
I would say yes.
Okay, that's what we'll do then. You will see the revised wording that puts you all on a fairly tight turnaround schedule, but you'll see the revised wording in update. Mm-hmm. Okay. We turn then, thank you, Denise.